on radio, on YouTube, streaming live on investtalk.com, and for our podcast subscribers, this is Invest Talk. Independent thinking, shared success. Invest Talk is made possible by KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm serving clients throughout the United States. Here is KPP Financial portfolio manager, Luke Guerrero.
Good afternoon, investors, and welcome back to Invest Talk. My name is Luke Guerrero, and it is Thursday, December 12th, 2024. And if you look at the calendar, there is one scary thing it tells you, and it is that time moves so quickly. It feels to me like the year 2024 just began, but the reality is 2025 is just around the corner. But just because there's a new year, or rather just because this year is about to end, doesn't mean we can relax. And that is because we come here each and every day to help make ourselves better and more informed investors. And in order to do that, Justin, myself, our entire team here at InvestTalk, we bring some important items to the table, some actionable items, some stories, things that are driving markets, things that we expect to drive markets into the future. But that's not what this show is mainly about. This show is mainly about you and your finance and investment questions via voicemail on our iTunes review section, in the comment section of the InvestTalk YouTube channel, and most importantly, live throughout the show. Help drive this conversation forward. Now, in just a bit, we're going to talk about today's market performance and run down the show topics, but I mentioned the most important part of that show, and that is the questions from you. So let's tackle our first one now.
Hello. I was hoping you guys could look at Greenbrier. The ticker is GBX. It's something that's been on my watch list for a little bit, but it shot up kind of like with the Trump trade. And so I was wondering if you think it's too late to get in or if I should wait for a pullback. Just curious what you guys think, and I'll listen on the show. Thanks.
So Greenbrier Companies, ticker GBX, is a transportation and manufacturing firm. They do rail car manufacturing. They lease those rail cars. They manage all sorts of transportation services. And then they also finance and provide parts and repair for what they're manufacturing. And manufacturing makes up most of that business, about 85% of that business. Now, it's a small cap. It's about $2.1 billion market cap company. And in terms of debt, well, it's got pretty modest debt levels. About $1.8 billion as of the end of 2023 is where its debt stands. And it's been on an uptrend, though not a large amount of debt to keep on its balance sheet. That number is projected to be about $1.5 billion in terms of long-term debt through August 2024. Now, their interest coverage ratio is about 4.25, meaning that it is not overly levered. Looking at their cash flow going back to 2022, well, looks pretty solid, trending in the right direction, becoming positive during 2023 in terms of their net operating cash flow. Their free cash flow is still negative, but is improving. Their margins, though their best performance was back in August of 2018, are improving as well. Their net margin growing from about 1.6% to about 4.5%. The revenue is growing as well, about 3% on an annualized basis. And they have had quite the run-up. Year-to-date, they're up 51%. On the 52-week, they're up 66%. And so this name has been really outperforming the S&P 500 since about middle of 2022, about July of 2022. You see that 7% outperformance last year. You see 24.7% outperformance this year. And a lot of that has to do with some pretty significant growth, especially in some of those proportionately less representative parts of their revenue stream, that maintenance services and leasing and management, yet still great growth. But what I see here is a company that is headed in the right direction for the first time in some time, right? Cash flow is the lifeblood of businesses. It was on a downtrend from 2022, or rather from 2020 until 2022. And they corrected that. Their profitability, their margins are expanding again. They have started paying off their debt a little bit with the cash they've got. And they also pay a dividend. About 1.8% is where that's projected to be this year. That dividend has grown from about 96 cents per share to 120 this year. But it is important to note they also have bought back shares. So these are all things that we like. But as with any run-up, you have certain situations where things become a little bit expensive. I don't really think this is one of those. They're only trading at 13 times forward-looking earnings. They're only trading at 1.5 times their book value, though that is on the upper end for a manufacturing company. That is certainly something to be watchful of. Only trading about 6 times cash flow and trading less than 1 times sales. And so it's possible that this name that has benefited from the Trump trade, certainly as small caps have, still has some room to run. I think it's headed in the right direction. I would be weary of how expensive it is relative to the book value of its assets. And what we could see is a follow through on small caps going down, as we saw today. So I would keep this on my watch list. Maybe below the 60 level is where you would want to enter. Thanks for the call. Looks like we have our first live call. Tony from Florida, who's looking at NSRGY. Do you own it or are you looking to buy it?
I've been looking to buy it for a while. I keep watching it. It keeps going down. I was wondering if this is a good time to get in. Also, you know, given the recent coffee prices and being a foreign stock, I'm not sure if it's a good investment.
Sure. Well, let's take a look. This is Nestle. It says it's a nutrition, health, and wellness company. You might know it for its chocolates. It has a bunch of products in powdered and liquid, pet care, nutrition and health sciences is one of its business units as well. And it's pretty evenly split amongst all of those. Now, what you see here is a relative strength drop-off, right? Pretty strong drop-off. Going back to 2022 is when it started to trend in the wrong direction. And you haven't seen much of a relative strength recovery since then. It's down 25%. On the past 52 weeks, it's down 27% this year. And one of the reasons why is because revenue growth has just kind of stalled. You see that from 2018 until 2022, you had some pretty constant revenue growth. This year, pretty much flat. Net income actually is flat as well. And it looks like their margins, look at that, flat. And so what you see here is a situation where a company's growth has really stalled. Now, it could be that it's in the early stages of a turnaround. But again, one of the things that is difficult to overcome is the fact that you are not growing. And they recently had forward-looking guidance that really wasn't suggestive of anything in the short to immediate term. And so when I'm looking at this relative to other companies in the market, it's trading at 16 times forward-looking earnings, which is at its low. It's trading at about 11 times its cash flow, which is, again, at its 5-year low. But I think that low is justified. I just don't think where they are right now at the beginning stages of a turnaround that anything is set in stone in terms of it being successful. And the fact that they had really no growth and no expansion of their margins in the past year is really suggestive of that. So I would stay away from this name for now. Thanks for the call. Now we're going to do a short break. On the other side, I'll look at today's market activity and answer more of your questions here on Invest Talk. Sid from North Carolina, hang on. You will be next.
Okay, got to get serious with my finances. I've been working a long time, and I know there's still got to be more that I can do to build my wealth quicker. I don't want to have to work forever.
If you are not maximizing your employer-sponsored retirement plan, KPP Financial can help. With our professional oversight, you can potentially enhance your investment performance by an average of 3% annually. At KPP Financial, we provide a comprehensive 401k management program designed to optimize your retirement savings. Our approach includes creating custom investment allocations tailored to your goals and risk tolerance. That can make a big difference in your favor.
Maybe it's time to tune up my retirement plan.
For more information on how you can take control of your retirement savings, visit our website, kppfinancial.com.
KPP Financial. Sounds good.
InvestTalk, now with more than 60 million downloads. Justin Klein and Luke Guerrero are ready to answer your finance and investment questions 24/7, 888-99-CHART.
Sid from North Carolina, hope you didn't have to wait too long. You have a question about BJ's Wholesale. Do you own it or are you looking to buy it?
Hi, thank you for taking your time and picking up my call. No, I don't have in my portfolio right now. But I was just watching Costco results, and we were trying to compare the BJ's, and I thought probably compared to Costco, this might be a relatively cheaper one. And if you think this is a good company, what do you say about the entry point? And if you can give us additional input, that would be great. Again, thank you so much.
Awesome. Yeah. So BJ's Wholesale Club Holdings, Sid nailed it, is kind of like Costco in that they are a membership grocery store. Now, they've had a pretty good year, up 47%, up 49% on the 52-week. And their revenue has been growing pretty consistently from $13 billion, projected to be about $20 billion this year. That's almost 10%. That's 9% annualized growth rate over the past 5 years. At the same time, their margins, probably on the lower end of where you see these grocery chain outlets, usually between 2 and 4%, though it has been growing as well from 1.4% in January 2020, projected to be 2.6% net margin this year. You have to remember, these businesses do not run on wide margins. They are very narrow margin businesses. Now, taking a look at it, it's a $13 billion market cap company, about $2.9 billion of debt at the end of 2023. Now, their cash flow is kind of stable, though improving just slightly. Their relative strength has looked pretty solid going back to, let's say, about 2019. And they've really had a run-up with no significant pullbacks, a small pullback in August, but really, as have some of these other retail grocery stores, has had a great month, great time since November. Now, it's trading at 19 times in terms of its interest coverage ratio, so it's not overly levered, but there is a bit of short interest out there at about 6%. One thing I like is they are buying back shares from $138 million to $132 million in about 4 or 5 years. Now, one thing you mentioned is Costco is expensive, and Costco is expensive. One of the reasons why Costco is expensive is the size of it allows for scale and capture of the online retail space as well. And they've been moving more and more into it. But with BJ's, it is expensive in its own right. It's trading at 23 times forward-looking earnings, trading at 7.5 times its book value, trading at 14.7 times its cash flow. And so for a company that does not necessarily have the ability to capture online retail as well as Costco can just because of the nature of its scale and the size of its business, I think these are also equally high multiples for it to be trading at. So if you think Costco is too expensive, with Costco is very expensive. We still hold it for some of our clients because in terms of momentum, still an up momentum name. But if you think Costco is expensive, you have to take into consideration the differences between Costco and BJ's and understand that BJ's is expensive as well. So in terms of opening a position into BJ's right now, this is another one I would keep on my watch list. Great name. They've had great growth, headed in the right direction, but you know what? It still looks a little expensive to me. Thanks for the call. Now, before I run down today's market action, let me preview the planned items for the podcast. My main focus point concerns this question. What is investment suitability? To explain investment suitability is a crucial concept that ensures investments align with an investor's risk tolerance, financial goals, and personal circumstances. Governed by FINRA Rule 2111, it requires advisors and brokers to recommend investments that are appropriate for their clients' profiles, considering factors such as age, financial situation, and investment objectives. Also, we'll touch on the U.S. producer price index numbers that came out in November and what that means for inflation. Investors shouldn't count on much help from the Fed next year as well. So what does that mean for rate cut? And should we have time at the end of the show, we'll talk about a merger within the advertising business and what that means for the future of advertising. We also have some voice bank questions ready to play, as well as some questions that came in from the comment section of the InvestTalk YouTube channel. And of course, I welcome your finance and investment questions now, or you know what? Anytime over the next 40 minutes. Now, with that being said, we are about to head into another short break. But when we come back, we will tackle all of those things that I just mentioned. And before we do that, we'll also touch on the market today. This is InvestTalk. I'm Luke Guerrero, and I'm ready to take your calls at 888-99-CHART.
Got a question for Justin or Luke? I've heard you say multiple times that you prefer shorter duration treasury bonds.
You're the best person to ask it.
Can you explain to me why it is more advisable?
The symbol is UNIT. Wondering what you thought about this REIT, if it would be a good time to get in.
InvestTalk is ready 24/7.
So I was thinking, is it a good idea to sell your losses in a Roth IRA and just use whatever you have left to reinvest into better stocks?
Just wanted to ask you about one stock that I'm looking at, Entergy ETR. If you could run that down for me.
Don't forget to call InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
You've got finance and investment questions, and Luke Guerrero is ready to provide his unbiased answers. Call now or anytime, 888-99-CHART.
Let's talk a little bit about the market today. U.S. stocks were down, selling off through the afternoon and ending near session lows. Dow finished down 53 basis points, S&P 500 down 54, NASDAQ down 66, and the Russell 2000 down 1.38%. S&P now on track for a weekly decline, though NASDAQ holding on to week-to-date gains after hitting another all-time high and taking out the 20K level on Wednesday. Underperformers included small caps, oil services, refiners, industrial precious metals, and managed care. Relative outperformers included life insurers, investment banks, custody banks, software, and communications and networking companies. Dollar index was up 30 basis points. Gold finished down 1.7% after five straight days of gains, and crude oil settled down 40 basis points as well. Overall, it was a weaker day with negative breadth and lacking the recent support that has been coming from those Mag 7 names and the broader tech space. Some note of hotter headline PPI and uptick in initial jobless claims, though releases only firmed market expectations for another 25 basis point rate cut next week. Elsewhere on the policy front, the European Central Bank cut today as expected. Bank of Japan increasingly expected to hold next week and may not move until its March meeting. Positive takes on the Chinese Central Economic Work Conference, where headlines pointed towards additional rate cuts, higher fiscal deficits, domestic demand support, and overall a stabilization of the housing and stock markets. November headline PPI, which we'll touch on later, up 40 basis points month over month, hotter than the 30 basis point consensus. Weekly initial jobless claims rose to 242,000 versus 224,000, which was the consensus there, though continuing claims increase lower than forecast. Looking ahead to next week, macro highlights is the Wednesday's FOMC policy decision, as well as the updated SEP. Monday's economic calendar features the Empire Manufacturing and Flash PMIs for December. Tuesday brings retail sales, industrial production, and home builder sentiment. Housing starts and building permits are out on Wednesday. Claims, Philly Fed manufacturing, and final Q3 GDP and existing home sales come out on Thursday, and Friday brings the personal income and spending report, which includes core PCE inflation, along with the final Michigan consumer sentiment. Now let's dive right in to my main focus point today, which is about investment suitability. And investment suitability is really at the core of smart, but also prudent financial planning. Whether you're working with a financial advisor or broker, ensuring the investments that you have in your portfolio match your profile, match your risk tolerance, can really be the difference between financial growth and unexpected risk-taking and therefore losses. And so, how is this all regulated? Well, FINRA Rule 2111 is a regulation that is designed to protect investors by ensuring brokers and advisors only recommend investments suitable for their clients' needs and also their clients' objectives. It's not just about agreeing to a trade. Suitability demands that investments align with an investor's financial situation, their risk tolerance, and understanding of the potential consequences of such investments. So, what makes an investment suitable? Let's break it down. First, suitability involves risk. Brokers are responsible for understanding a client's ability to take on risk. How do you assess that? Well, a young investor with years ahead may benefit from higher risk assets like equities because you're trying to grow your capital. But the same strategy could be inappropriate for someone nearing retirement who may need safer, more liquid investments. A mismatch can lead to distress, it can lead to losses, and that's exactly why FINRA Rule 2111 exists. It aims to prevent that. Now, asset allocation plays a pretty big role too. Diversifying investments helps to balance risks and returns. An investor with a conservative pension plan might need a different mix than somebody with, let's say, a more diversified portfolio. Someone on the verge of retirement likely shouldn't have all of their funds tied up in Bitcoin or volatile futures contracts. Suitability isn't static, though, because people are constantly changing. There are life events. You get married, you have kids, your job changes, you buy a house, you replace your car, maybe you want a boat. And all of that should prompt a reassessment of if your portfolio is suitable for your needs and your financial goals now. For investors, understanding risk is really a key thing. It's the key thing. Even if you grasp the complexities of high-risk assets like structured products, that doesn't automatically make it suitable for your portfolio. If you're an investor and suspect that your broker or your financial advisor is making unsuitable investments on your behalf, it's important that you be an advocate for yourself. You need to raise concerns with the broker, with the advisor, or more importantly, with the firm's management. If the issue isn't resolved, well, maybe you need to take legal steps. Maybe you need to find another broker, find another financial advisor. Ultimately, avoiding unsuitable investments, it's about protecting yourself. It protects your financial health. It also protects your peace of mind. Inappropriate investments, even if they don't wipe out your portfolio, can lead to unnecessary stressors, poor returns, and can hinder your ability to reach your financial goals. Just like that, we have another break ahead of us. And when we come back, we'll touch on more stories, more educational items, but most importantly, more of your finance and investment questions. Let's face it, InvestTalk listeners, life can be unpredictable, but securing your family's financial future doesn't have to be. That's where Fabric by Gerber Life comes in. Fabric offers modern, flexible term life insurance designed to fit your lifestyle. Whether you're planning for the future or just want a little extra peace of mind, Fabric makes protecting what matters most simple and stress-free. Fabric by Gerber Life is term life insurance you can get done right from your couch, all online and on your schedule. You could be covered in under 10 minutes with no health exam required. If you got kids, and especially if you're young and healthy, the time to lock in low rates is now. Even if you have life insurance through your employer, it may not offer enough protection for your family, and it may not follow you if you leave your job. Fabric has flexible, high-quality policies that fit your family and your budget. Like $1 million in coverage for less than a dollar a day. Fabric has partnered with Gerber Life, trusted by millions of families like yours for over 50 years. There's no risk, and there's a 30-day money-back guarantee, and you can cancel at any time. Join the thousands of parents who trust Fabric to help protect their family. Apply today in just minutes at meetfabric.com/investtalk. That's meetfabric.com/investtalk. meetfabric.com/investtalk. Policies issued by Western Southern Life Assurance Company. Not available in certain states. Prices subject to underwriting and health questions.
You've got two for the price of one. Justin Klein and Luke Guerrero are here, and they're taking your finance and investment questions now. 888-99-CHART.
What's going on, Invest Talk? This is Pete from Staten Island. I had a question, not to buy or sell a stock, but I was curious if you guys could explain to me, a layman who's not a financial investor, who briefly comes in and out of the financial sector when there's news, explain MicroStrategy. Is it not like a Ponzi Madoff scheme? Michael Saylor goes online and just talks about buying Bitcoin and selling shares of MicroStrategy to buy more Bitcoin. And I'm like, how is this real? Like, how is this real life? How is this happening in front of us? Is there something going on that I'm not seeing? Or is this simply max euphoria in the markets? Like, it seems crazy. I don't know if I'm the crazy one, but I would love to hear you guys talk about this and kind of give your point of view perspective on it. Again, I'm not buying it. I'm simply just curious what is going on with MicroStrategy. Thank you, and I look forward to hearing your answer.
So MicroStrategies, for those who do not know what it is a company run by Michael Saylor. And essentially its existence, its mission, its purpose is to buy Bitcoin. I think it owns about 2% of the 21 million Bitcoin that exists now. I could be wrong, but I think I read that somewhere. But no matter how much they own now, their goal is to continue to buy Bitcoin. How do they do that? Well, they issue a bunch of shares. And they also issue a bunch of convertible debt notes with no coupons. And so the way they do that, the way they buy Bitcoin, and the way it turns it ends up, is that MicroStrategies, the share value of MicroStrategies is worth more than the Bitcoin that they hold. You are paying a premium by owning MicroStrategies above the value of Bitcoin. And therefore, the only way you get return is if the price of Bitcoin continues to go up, though that's going to be return related to the Bitcoin holdings. But if somebody down the road continues to buy these shares and provide more capital to MicroStrategies to continue buying Bitcoin. So then what I'm saying is the value of MicroStrategies in the future depends on somebody willing to pay a premium above what you paid for it. A premium that is far above the value of the assets that it holds, the only asset being one asset, Bitcoin. And so is a company whose entire purpose predicated upon somebody buying more after you, does that make it a Ponzi scheme? I'll leave that to you to decide. Either way, I don't think that MicroStrategies is a good investment. I think the premium is too much. I think if you want to get Bitcoin, invest in Bitcoin. That was the whole purpose of Bitcoin, self-custody, owning things. There are so many vehicles out there that exist just to give you access to something where the main purpose of it was you having full ownership of it. So if you want to buy Bitcoin, I just say buy the actual asset, not all of these different vehicles that are trying to give you levered or added premium exposure to it. Thanks for the call. You probably noticed that we are answering questions submitted by not just listeners, but viewers over there on our Invest Talk YouTube channel. And that's because we also post the podcast in video form. It's Invest Talk with two T's. And you know what? Why don't you go check it out? And if you are over there and you have a question, feel free to leave it over there. And we'll get to it. This one on GCT. It says, what are your thoughts on GCT? I bought it 1 year ago with an average cost of $10.65. Watched it go up to $42, and now it's been cut in half from that high. It's a relatively small position in my portfolio, but I would love to know what you think. Thanks for the program. Well, GCT is GigaCloud Technology. It's a B2B e-commerce platform that essentially just connects manufacturers and resellers across the globe. It's a relatively small company, about $896 million market cap. And it's got a little bit of long-term debt, about $343 million in debt. Now take a look at this. Since it's gone public, well, it dropped off. As you tend to see, we say this all the time, as you tend to see with IPOs, you see them very, very weak in their first year. And after that, steadily it's moved back upward. Now, as I mentioned, they have $403 million in debt, but they're not really overly levered. Their interest coverage ratio is about 468 times. Their cash flow is improving. Their profitability is improving as well. Their net margin has grown from about 6.7 back in 2021. They started trading in 2022. So let's say 4.7% net margin to about 11%, though down from the 13% of last year. Now, in terms of their earnings per share growth, that also looks pretty good as well. From $2.31 this year, projected to be $3.93 next year, though falling off to $3.86 the year after that. One thing that is a giant old red flag here, 22.94% short interest. 22.94%. And what are the reasons why investors are concerned right now? Well, what is tariffs going to have? What effect will tariffs have on this company, right? If you're connecting suppliers to resellers, your input goods get more expensive, especially because it's a global company. Where are those goods coming from? What are the importation costs of those? Well, that could have a negative effect on the revenue of this company. And so even though it's grown about 10 times since 2019 from 122 million to 1.1 billion, it has understandably hit a little bit of a roadblock. That's why its price is cut in half from that high that you saw at 42. It's only up 13% year to date, 45% on the 52 week. And so with these concerns, well, it's trading at pretty cheap valuations now. Only about 0.8 price to sales, only about 2.2 times price to book value. And so it's cheap. It is cheaper than it has been. It's got solid growth. But I think there are just too many risks out there on the horizon, something that we're going to get clarity of really pretty soon, a couple months from now. And so for now, I would just hold on to this name because there is, I would say, a lot more risks to the downside at this point than potential to the upside. Thanks for watching. Now, I mentioned it at the top of the show, but the producer's price index came out today and producer's prices rose by more than expected in November, marking the largest increase in 5 months. PPI jumped 40 basis points last month, driven largely by a surge in egg prices, which spiked due to an avian flu outbreak. Goods prices, especially food, accounted for most of the rise. In fact, food prices soared 3.1%, with egg prices vaulting up a staggering 54.6% after dropping sharply in October. Now, it's not all bad. There's a silver lining. Costs for services like portfolio management fees and airline fares eased in November, suggesting that the broader disinflation trend might still be intact. Services prices edged up just 20 basis points after climbing 30 in October. Slower pace in services could really help tame core inflation, which the Federal Reserve closely watches for signs of progress towards its 2% target. And meanwhile, the labor market also had some updates for us, right? It showed signs of cooling. Weekly jobless claims rose by 17,000 to 242,000. And continuing claims, measure of how many people are still receiving those unemployment benefits, well, that climbed as well to 1.886 million. Now, these figures indicate that laid off workers are really taking longer to find new jobs. It means that the labor market is softening. There is some softening for labor demand overall. And the recent uptick in unemployment now at 4.2% is another signal that the red hot job market really might be cooling down. All these factors, inflation, labor, they're fueling expectations that the Fed will deliver another interest rate cut next week, its third in a row. Financial markets are betting pretty heavily on a quarter point cut, which would lower the federal funds rate to a range of 425 to 450. But there are, again, risks ahead. There is policy change ahead. If the incoming Trump administration pushes forward with higher tariffs and mass deportations, inflation could spike again in 2024, complicating what the Fed does moving forward, the possibility of rate cuts into next year. And so for now, the mixed signals on inflation and the job market really have left investors cautious. Stocks were mostly lower, the dollar held steady, and treasury yields inched up. And so while November's inflation report suggests some progress, it's important to note that the path of lower inflation is far from clear. And when the path of inflation is far from clear, so is the path of interest rates. Let's keep things moving and play another listener question from 888-99-CHART.
Hello, guys. This is Miguel here from Lake Forest, California. I have a question about ticket symbol BAC. This is Bank of America. I had a couple months back Justin was mentioning that this company was hopefully, or, you know, it was going to go down to the low 30s, 32 values, if I remember correctly. And after the, you know, election, it seems like this company has been going up. And I was wondering if it will make sense to get a put for next year, sometime in the July time frame, for the mid-30s strike price. So thank you so much for what you guys do. And I will hear you in the podcast. Thank you. Bye-bye.
So ticker BAC, Bank of America. It is one of the largest banks in this country. And it has had a pretty solid 3 months, up 18.8%, up 36% over the past year, up 36% year to date, up 49% over the past year. Now, its interest income has grown 14% on an annualized basis. Its net interest income has grown 3.7% on an annualized basis. And its price to earnings, forward-looking price to earnings, 12.5. Price to book 1.3, it all is in a pretty reasonable range in terms of its valuation. Now it has quite a bit of debt, but you know what? That is its business. It's a $353 billion market cap company. They've been buying back shares. They pay a solid dividend, about 2.3% of where it is right now. And that dividend has increased every year going back to 2018 from 54 cents a share, projected to be one whole dollar a share this year. Its cash flow also looks pretty solid as well. And so with banks, we really got to think about the macro environment into next year. I've been talking a lot about over the past couple of months how I prefer these larger banks compared to the regional banks. Why? Well, larger banks have a better ability to deal with changing rates, right? One of the biggest things that brought down some of those banks in 2023 was the rise in rates and the banked in losses on balance sheets that when depositors needed their money, they had to sell those, they had to recognize those losses. Some banks didn't have enough capital to fund, right? They were insolvent. But you don't have as much of a worry with that with like Bank of America. Bank of America is a too big to fail bank. And so the macro picture next year, what does it favor? It favors potentially more growth, deregulation, easing of capital requirements, all things that allow banks to go out and make more money. That's why this bank and all these large banks are doing well. And so it's honestly trading at a pretty reasonable range. I don't think this is a time to expect it to drop lower in the 30 level. You know, you saw investment banks doing well today. The deal pipeline is growing as well. I think that banks have had quite a run-up, obviously almost 20% over the past 3 months. But again, this is a situation where the macro tailwinds are favorable here. So I don't think now is a good time to open up a short for Bank of America. Thanks for the call. Let's keep it going with two in a row right now.
Hi there, Duncan from New York. Thank you for all that you do. I am looking to compare two ETFs. I'm currently on Fidelity.com and I'm in my Roth IRA and I bought two ETFs that consist of Bitcoin. Grayscale Bitcoin Trust, GBTC, and Franklin Bitcoin ETF, EZBC. I bought this like a while back. I don't know why like I bought two of them, but I would obviously like to condense into one. I know that the net expense ratio on GBTC is 1.5, which I believe is obviously very high. And it says on the ECBC that it's zero. So my question is, which one is better? Two, what else would you look for when you're looking to, you know, compare ETFs rather than like what else is in it? Because I think both of these just have purely Bitcoin. Thank you very much and have a good day. Bye.
Yeah, so I think anytime you're trying to get into a investment vehicle, rather, that is trying to mimic the experience of a commodity, two things we really are concerned about. One, fees, right? You mentioned it here. The expense ratio of EZBC, Franklin Bitcoin ETF, it's only 29 basis points. What's the expense ratio of GBTC? 1.15%. It's also structure. The Bitcoin ETF is an ETF. Grayscale Bitcoin Trust is a trust. And so you're going to see, because of the trading dynamics and the structures, you're going to see some potentially significant premiums, significant discounts to NAV. Whereas EZBC, the Franklin ETF, is going to more closely align with Bitcoin's market price. So that's number two, right? What experience are you getting? Is it similar to the underlying commodity that you are targeting? Another one is that EZBC trades on major exchanges, right? They could potentially offer better liquidity. And so with all of those factors, I think you would likely want to be in the cheaper ETF structure that is more liquid and offers a more representative price experience, return experience to Bitcoin without some of that low liquidity volatility. Thanks for the call. This is InvestTalk. I'm Luke Guerrero, and we have one goal here: to help you achieve your financial freedom. Our work continues after our final break, so get your questions in now at 888-99-CHART.
More about a company which I've been tracking for some time.
Luke Guerrero is here and ready to tackle your questions.
And I was just wondering, are there any investment accounts with different banks that you would recommend, something that may offer good resources?
Don't forget to call InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
Every investor is working to build a secure financial future. How they get there and when they get there, that depends on many variables. The more you learn about how the market works, the better your chances. So don't forget to call InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
Our final question of the day will be another YouTube question. This one on ticker PHD. It says, can you please cover PHDG, Royal Philips? Is it recommended based on fundamentals? And if so, what is the best price to pick? Now, Philips is a technology company. It develops, manufactures, and produces products related to healthcare, lighting, consumer well-being. Now, its biggest business segment is the diagnosis and treatment segment, about 49% of its business. Connected care technologies, about 28%. Personal health, about 20%. Now, it's a $24 billion market cap company with about $8.4 billion in debt, though that has been paid down quite a bit over the past year or so. Now, in terms of revenue, it has negative revenue growth. Its relative strength dropped off in about 2021, and it really has not recovered much since then. Its margins are negative. It's not making any money. It hasn't made money in a couple years. And so I think this is an easy answer for me. You have a company who's trending in the wrong direction. You have revenue still falling, not revenue growth falling, but revenue still falling. You have net income that, although has improved, is still negative. It's headed in the right direction in terms of its profitability, but it's not quite there yet. Now, because of this, it's cheap. It's trading at 1.9 times its book value. It's trading at 1.2 times its sales. It's trading at 13 times its cash flow. But I think until you see some sustained success in this business, which albeit has probably been disadvantaged because of cyclical issues, I think there are still better investment opportunities out there. Because you have to remember, when you're investing, it's not just about if the name is going to do well. It's an opportunity cost thing. Could you do better elsewhere? I think you could. Thanks for the call. Or the comment, rather. Now, Madison Avenue, a historic location in New York with advertising agencies, is facing its biggest shakeup in decades. A major deal announced on December 9th between Omnicom and Interpublic, two of the world's largest ad agencies, is set to create the biggest player in the industry. This merger would push Omnicom ahead of rivals like France's Publicis and Britain's WPP, shifting the center of advertising power firmly to New York. But despite the blockbuster size of the deal, the ad industry's challenges are hard to miss. Why? Well, more and more businesses are being captured by tech giants like Google and Meta and Amazon, who now make it easier for companies to handle ads in-house. This year, the three firms, plus China's ByteDance and Alibaba, are expected to take in over half of global ad spending. In contrast, traditional ad agencies have barely grown by 3% a year since 2018. AI is another force that is reshaping the industry. What part of AI? Generative AI. It allows precise targeting of customers, yes, but it also allows video picture generation. Research firm Forrester predicts AI could eliminate 7.5% of U.S. advertising jobs by 2030. And so these two companies hope their merger can help them withstand all of these pressures. They're promising $750 million a year in cost savings and plan to invest more in AI. Combining forces could also give them more pricing power. But John Wren, Omnicom CEO, points out that dominance of tech giants could ease those concerns, or should ease those concerns. Plus, the Trump administration may create a more business-friendly environment. Still, AI might not be the magic bullet these agencies are hoping for. It'll likely be more of a utility, something that you use rather than giving you a key advantage. And so instead, the future may lie in combining ad buying with data analytics. In the end, the most vulnerable part of the industry could be the creative side. Why is that? Because of that other aspect of AI I mentioned, creation. With technology changing the game, having so many creative shops may soon be more of a burden than a benefit. It may lead to cost reduction, yes, but the companies that aren't as specialized in these technologies do not stand to do well in the future of advertising. I'm Luke Guerrero, and this completes another InvestTalk program. We thank you for listening, and we encourage you to tell your friends and family members about our free podcast downloads. Get yours anytime at iTunes, Google Play, and Spotify, and please be sure to leave us a rate and review. Remember, we can help you better understand your portfolio dynamics and calculate your investor risk number. Just go to investtalk.com and click the portfolio review button. This is a free and confidential service. And if you haven't optimized the potential of your 401k, guess what? We can help you with that too. It all starts at investtalk.com. Independent thinking, shared success. This is InvestTalk. Good night.
InvestTalk is a trademark of KPP Financial. Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for the listener to understand that not all comments made will apply to them. Specifically, nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell security. Because such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor firm which retains all rights. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. Thank you for listening. And your comments and questions are welcome on our 24-hour listener line at 888-99-CHART.